Now, the boats which were developed by Skorzeny were called the Linson, okay? And we're going to come back to the development of the Linson in just a couple of minutes. Now, in addition to the explosive motorboats, which we're going to discuss in greater detail, it's worth noting that Skorzeny was involved with the use of, or the development, really, I should say, of suicide aircraft. In other words, the use of kamikaze aircraft, if you will. And he worked very closely in the development of a number of different suicide weapons with a woman named Hanna Reitsch, last name R-E-I-T-S-C-H, who was an accomplished Nazi test pilot and one of Hitler's personal favorites. And one of the weapons that Hanna Reitsch and Skorzeny combined on was the development of piloted V-1 rockets, in other words, the explosive missiles used by Nazi Germany with good effect against Great Britain, among others. And Skorzeny and Hanna Reitsch were involved with the development of a piloted suicide version of this weapon. O'Neill describes this as follows. It was at this juncture that Skorzeny and the intrepid Hanna Reitsch, who had not long recovered from multiple skull fractures incurred while testing the ME-163 rocket fighter, pressed for reconsideration of a piloted FI-103. That's the V-1, basically, under a different designation. According to Skorzeny's own account, Adolf Hitler was at the time, late 1944, dubious of the moral effect of suicide weapons, but by misrepresenting the Führer's views to Erhard Milch, M-I-L-C-H, at the Air Ministry, and to Reich Minister Albert Speer, Skorzeny pushed forward the project. Lack of volunteers for Reichenberg operations. Some 30 men from Skorzeny's own commando force, dedicated members of the SS who had already received some pilot training, were joined by about 60 selected Luftwaffe personnel for training in the two-seat R-2. Pilots of the Leonidas Staffel, that was Skorzeny's suicide air brigade, pilots of the Leonidas Staffel were to carry the self-styled Selbststoffvermanner, the suicide personnel, into action. By October 1944, about 175 R-4s were ready for use. Had they been available earlier for deployment against the Normandy invasion fleet in June of 1944, they almost certainly would have been used, and, judging from the evidence of Japanese operations, might have proved effective against Channel shipping. And last interesting note here is that when the Allies captured many of the German special weapons at the end of World War II, under an operation called Project Paperclip, or Operation Paperclip, many of these piloted V-1s were captured. Of course, Operation Paperclip, or Project Paperclip, is something we've talked about at great length on this series. It involved basically the importation of many of Germany's top scientists into the United States to work within the U.S. National Security Establishment, a development which led to many, many later problems, not the least of which was the assassination of President Kennedy, as we've talked about on these broadcasts before. Now, it's worth noting here that two people we've been looking at here, Skorzeny and Borghese, crop up in connection with a much more modern set of developments as well. Both Commander Borghese and Otto Skorzeny were very much involved with the development of something called the Internationale Fascista. Now, the Internationale Fascista was an amalgam of far right-wing elements basically dedicated to turning the world fascist. And it's worth noting here that the Internationale Fascista, or just about all of its elements, have either are now or have at some time in the past been connected with the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA is the common denominator for all of the elements of the Internationale Fascista. Combine that with the fact that the Internationale Fascista is in the habit, or has been in the habit of disguising its crimes as crimes of the left, whereas it is itself, as its name indicates, a fascist organization. Now, the Internationale Fascista was basically the grandchild of Otto Skorzeny, I guess you could say, and Prince Borghese worked very closely with him on this. I'm going to reread a passage here, which we've been over many, many times on this broadcast. It comes from Henrik Kruger's The Great Heroin Coup. The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Kruger, published in soft cover, copyrighted 1980 by the South End Press of Boston. And this particular passage we've read many times on this broadcast. Hopefully some of you will have this down now. Some of you, I would think, would be able to just about recite this passage from memory. But it is very complex. It involves a lot of different names, and I think it's worth going into, again, in the context of suicide squads. Remember now, Scorzani and Borghese not only worked separately, but worked together during World War II to develop suicide weapons. Borghese began with the Italian Navy, communicated his skills to Scorzani in direct cooperation with Scorzani, and Scorzani then put those skills to work in developing explosive motorboats and kamikaze aircraft for Nazi Germany. And we see both Scorzani and Borghese involved with the Internazionale Fascista. Henrik Krüger describes their cooperation as follows in The Great Heroin Coup. The common denominator in KORU, as well as Internazionale Fascista, a combine of anti-communist extremist organizations chartered at an October 1976 meeting in Rome, attended by KORU representatives, appears to have been the CIA, or at least a faction thereof. Internazionale Fascista is the outgrowth of many years of planning in Madrid by the late Nazi Otto Scorzani, who in the 50s had worked for the CIA. On its rolls are former SS agents, OAS terrorists, hatchet men for Portugal's dreaded secret police, the PIDE, terrorists from Spain's Fuerza Nueva, Argentine and Italian fascists, Cuban exiles, French gangsters from the Service de l'Action Civique, and former CIA agents hardened by terror campaigns in Operation 40, Guatemala, Brazil, and Argentina. Besides KORU, Internazionale Fascista's militants have at various times numbered the Army for the Liberation of Portugal and its Agence Presse contingent under Yves Garin-Saac, the Italian Ordine Nuovo led by Salvatore Franchia and Pierluigi Conchitelli, Spain's Guerrillas of Christ the King, the Asociación Anticomunista Iberica and the Alianza Anticomunista Apostolica, the AAA, which is not to be confused with the Argentine AAA that is also represented in Internazionale Fascista and the Paladin Group. SS Colonel Scorzani was the kingpin of the Paladin mercenary group until his death in 1975. Dr. Gerhard Hartmut von Schubert, formerly of Joseph Goebbels' propaganda ministry, was its operating manager. Headquartered in Albufeira, Spain, its actual nerve centers were Scorzani's export-import offices and cover firm MC, located at a Madrid address shared with a front for the Spanish intelligence agency SCOE under Colonel Eduardo Blanco, and also an office of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. I'm going to read that last sentence again. Headquarters in Albufeira, Spain. Its actual nerve centers, this recall is the Paladin Mercenary Group, its actual nerve centers were Scorzani's export-import offices and cover firm MC, located at a Madrid address shared with a front for the Spanish intelligence agency SCOE under Colonel Eduardo Blanco, and also an office of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. So Internazionale Fascista's main component, the Paladin Group, shares an office with the CIA. Or shares a building, rather, with an office of the CIA. The cozy relationship of Spanish right-wing terrorists with U.S. and Spanish intelligence is further underlined by the SCOE's purchase in the mid-70s of Mitchell Werbel's silenced M10 machine pistols, prior to which the ideal terrorist weapon had been unavailable in Europe. Shortly thereafter, the M10 turned up in the hands of Spanish and Italian terrorists. A mélange of former OAS and SAC figures and West German rightist activists and mercenaries, Paladin joined terrorist actions in Europe, Africa, Latin America, and even Southeast Asia. Along with Italian fascists, Paladin is responsible for the 17th of December 1973 bombing of Rome's Fiumicino Airport, which claimed 32 lives. On behalf of the Spanish government, Paladin kidnapped and murdered leaders of the Basque ETA, and in 1974-6 engineered some 50 bombings in Basque country. Paladin's bankrollers included Scorzani's weapons empire and Libyan head of state, Muammar Gaddafi. The Scorzani-controlled World Armco, with main offices in Paris, was registered in the name of Paladin manager von Schubert. Upon the death of Scorzani in 1975, von Schubert moved to Argentina, but returned 6 months later to reorganize. Internazionale Fascista was a crucial first step toward fulfilling the dream not only of Scorzani, but also of his close friends in Madrid exile, José López Rega, Juan Perón's gray eminence, and Prince Justo Valerio Borghese, the Italian fascist money man who had been rescued from execution at the hands of the World War II Italian resistance by future CIA counterintelligence whiz James J. Angleton. They and other Nazi and fascist powers throughout Europe and Latin America envisioned a new world order built on a fascist iron circle linking Buenos Aires, Santiago, Lima, La Paz, Brasilia, and Montevideo. So again, in the Internazionale Fascista, we find Scorzini and Borghese, who previously cooperated in the development of suicide weapons, and we find them both very much affiliated, in fact, two of the linchpins of the Internazionale Fascista. Something very interesting here as well is the fact that the main component of Internazionale Fascista, Otto Scorzini's Paladin Mercenary Group, involved was co-bankrolled not only by Scorzini's weapons empire, but also by Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. Now, in the past, we've talked about how Gaddafi's arms and training came from the CIA through Messrs. Turple and Wilson, who were not ex-CIA at all, as we've discussed on this broadcast. It's worth noting, too, that Muammar Gaddafi is no stranger to the development of suicide weapons. Now, recall that Scorzini and Borghese cooperate in the development of suicide weapons. Both are involved with the Internazionale Fascista. We find Muammar Gaddafi also involved with the Internazionale Fascista. And again, Muammar Gaddafi is very much connected to the use of suicide squads and suicide weapons in general. A quick example of this was carried in the San Jose Mercury News on Friday, May 18th of 1984. It's an AP story datelined Libya, or Tripoli, Libya, headline, Liquidation Units to Slay Libya's Traitors Abroad. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's regime said Thursday that suicide squads are being created to hunt down and kill Libyan dissidents abroad. The masses have decided to form suicide commandos to chase traitors, fugitives, and stray dogs wherever they are and liquidate them physically and without any hesitation, unquote, the official news agency JANA said in a dispatch. And specifically, we're going to take a detailed look at one possible weapon which may at some point be used by Muammar Gaddafi and its similarity to a weapon developed by Otto Scorzini. I'd like to jump back now to the development of something we referred to earlier, namely the Linsen. Now, the Linsen, or lentil as it is translated, it translates into German, were the explosive motorboats developed by Otto Scorzini from the basic design which he got from Giusto Valerio Borghese. Recall the two cooperated after the capitulation of Italy in World War II. Now, basically, the Linsen were high-speed motorboats filled with explosives which would crash into the sides of ships and explode after the crash, hopefully, according to people operating them, would sink that ship. Now, the Linsen, these remote-controlled explosive motorboats, were basically very similar to something that Muammar Gaddafi has today. Now, the Linsen were originally piloted by an individual who would then crash the boat into the side of the target ship. Eventually, the Linsen were remote controlled. O'Neill describes this in Suicide Squads. In theory, Linsen operations were more complex than those of Italian or Japanese EMBs. Each section of three Linsen comprised two one-man explosive-carrying boats and one two-man control boat. The boats were intended to attack under cover of darkness, their major targets being transports at anchor. They approached the target area at slow speed. The Linsen's engines were supposedly silent at a speed below 8 kilometers an hour, and with the control boat a little to the rear of the pair of EMBs. Then, within a few hundred yards of the target, the Linsen increased to full speed. Some 100 yards from the target, the pilots of the explosive-carrying Linsen tripped switches that turned over their craft to radio guidance by the control boat. Then the pilots ditched to be kept afloat by their life jackets until picked up by the control boat. The radio operator in the control boat was equipped with an ultra-shortwave transmitter based on the remote guidance system developed in 1943 for the B-4 Funkelpanzer demolition tank. It was his task to steer an unpiloted Linsen into its target by keeping in line recognition lights, green in the bows, red in the stern, switched on by the EMB's pilot before ditching when his boat was on a collision course. These lights were shielded so that they could be seen only from astern. The radio operator's simple control box was capable of altering the Linsen's course to port or starboard, stopping, starting, slowing or accelerating its engine, or detonating its explosive charge as close as possible to the target if the EMB itself appeared likely to miss. And again, these were developed by Otto Scorzini, and eventually he worked out a means where the pilots of manned torpedoes could remote control the Linson if necessary. Again, O'Neill describes this. Scorzani wrote that Linson could, if necessary, be remote controlled by the pilots of Neger manned torpedoes, and a British naval historian records that Linson pilots captured off Normandy claimed that their boats were meant not to attack, but for the rescue of Neger operators. So that eventually, rather, had it turned around. He felt that, Scorzani felt that eventually the pilots of the manned torpedoes could control the Linson boats themselves. And again, keep in mind Scorzani's work in developing the remote-controlled explosive boats originally developed by Borghese as suicide weapons. Recall also that Otto Scorzani and Muammar Gaddafi are the co-bankrollers of the Paladin mercenary group of the Internazionale Fascista. Keep these remote-controlled explosive boats in mind as you listen to the following article. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, March 1st of 1984. This is a New York Times story, Dateline Washington, and headlined, Robot Terror Boats of Libya Reported. Libya has acquired a fleet of remotely controlled speedboats that could be used in terrorist attacks against U.S. Navy, against U.S. ships, the Navy's chief intelligence officer said yesterday. John Butts, director of Naval Intelligence, testified before Congress that the pilotless speedboat fleet is significant for its potential application in terrorist operations, unquote. He said the drones, moving at speeds of 30 knots, are packed with high explosives and controlled from cabin cruisers as far as 8 miles away. Butts did not say precisely how many drones Libya has acquired, and the Navy refused to expand on his remarks, which were prepared for the House Armed Services Sea Power and Strategic and Critical Materials Subcommittee. Butts did say that Libya has more than 50 control craft. U.S. ships in the Eastern Mediterranean and in the Persian Gulf are on high alert after receiving intelligence warnings of kamikaze attacks from light aircraft or speedboats. In both areas, the Navy has had to fire warning shots across the bows of unidentified boats that had approached too close, the Pentagon has said. The Libyan drones, which Butts said, quote, are being produced in Libya and abroad, unquote, presumably would allow a terrorist attack without a suicide pilot or crew. Now, as we've seen, just such remote-controlled explosive boats were developed by Otto Scorzani through his work with Borghese during World War II. And recall that not only are Borghese and Scorzani then associated with the CIA-connected Internazionale Fascista after World War II, but we've seen that Otto Scorzani and Muammar Gaddafi were associated in the Paladin mercenary group as well, also after World War II. Now, keep in mind the fact that the Internazionale Fascista involves these three elements, that is to say, Scorzani, Borghese, and Gaddafi. Keep in mind the suicide attacks on American installations recently, and listen to the one final paragraph here from Henry Krueger's The Great Heroin Coup. What has made sleuth work difficult is Internazionale Fascista's attempts to camouflage itself as an arm of the left. When General Joaquin Centeno Anaya, Bolivia's ambassador to France, was shot down in Paris in May of 1976, a caller to the police claimed the Che Guevara Brigade had murdered him to avenge the 1967 capture of Guevara in Bolivia. An eyewitness, moreover, claimed to have recognized the assailant as the infamous left-wing terrorist Carlos. However, 1 month later, the Nouvel Observateur reported that the assassination had been planned at Madrid's Consulada Hotel by Bolivian intelligence agent Saavedra and three terrorists from the Paladin Group. Furthermore, inspection of Zenteno Anaya's politics revealed his opposition to Bolivian President Bonzer and allegiance to ex-president Torres, whose murder in Argentina followed shortly after Zenteno's. Then it was the turn of former Chilean Foreign Minister Orlando Letelier to be murdered by Chilean and Cuban terrorists in Washington, soon after which the establishment U.S. press, citing CIA and FBI sources, pointed the finger at the Chilean left. Okay, now recall that, as we've seen in the past, Frank Turpel has boasted of training Carlos the Jackal, and the CIA at one point protected Carlos himself. So the cropping up here of Carlos's name in connection with the Internazionale Fascista is interesting in light of the fact that both Gaddafi of the Internazionale Fascista and Carlos have had massive contacts with the Triple Wilson wing of CIA. Okay, that pretty much winds things up for the broadcast today. Keep in mind now, as you see these suicide attacks going on, keep in mind the presence of Skorzeny and Borghese and Gaddafi together in the Internacional Fascista. Keep in mind the similarities in the robot-controlled boats that Gaddafi supposedly has now, the similarity between those boats and the EMBs that Skorzeny helped develop, Tiblinson. And keep in mind the fact that some of these suicide attacks on American installations, although they obviously don't involve boats or airplanes at this point, may be provocations. That is, provocation, of course, as we've seen in the past, is a form of terrorism in which one commits an act in order to discredit one's opposition. Frequently, one commits a terrorist act against one's own forces in order to blame the opposition, both for propaganda purposes and also in order to arouse the tempers of one's own forces against the projected enemy. Before winding up, let's sum up what we've looked at. We began by taking a look at the development by Prince Justo Valerio Borghese of midget submarines to be used in a suicide attack on New York Harbor during World War II. Following that from a book called Suicide Squads by Richard O'Neill. Following that, again from the same book, we took a look at the cooperation between Borghese and SS Colonel Otto Skorzeny after the capitulation of Italy. Basically, Borghese communicated his skills with regard to suicide weapons to Otto Skorzeny, who then used those skills on behalf of the Third Reich. We took a look at Skorzeny's development of piloted V-1 flying bombs. And then we took a look at the cooperation in Skorzeny and Borghese in the Internacional Fascista, a fascist combine operating after World War II with the assistance of either the CIA or elements thereof. And we took a look in that regard, the presence of Muammar Gaddafi in the Paladin mercenary group run by Skorzeny. And we took a look at Gaddafi's use of suicide squads. We took a look at the development of the remote-controlled Linson explosive motorboats and the similarity, those developed by Otto Skorzeny, and the similarity between the Linson and explosive motorboats, also remote-controlled, currently possessed by Muammar Gaddafi, according to U.S. intelligence sources. And, of course, those two, Gaddafi and Skorzeny, are associated with Paladin Group and appear to have many, many similar ideas. And finally, we took a look at the Internacional Fascista's habit of disguising itself as an element of the left in order to attribute its terrorism to the left. That winds up this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery.
And we're going to take a musical break and give all of us a chance to... A powerful coup group, C-O-U-P, coup group, with members high in the Italian military. Otto Skorzeny, the Nazi commando turned arms agent, was a key backer of the Rosa conspiracy, just as he had supplied arms to the Borghese putsch attempt of December 1970. So again, besides the December 1970 coup attempt, which we talked about earlier, where Skorzeny worked with Borghese, the Black Prince, one of the most powerful men of Italian fascism. In addition, he also worked with several members of these groups, including Sindona, Michele Sindona, who had also been involved in the first coup group, on the Rosa Diventi coup, along with these various people, Sindona included, in 1973.
Again, we looked at both the Rosa Diventi coup and the Borghese coup attempt in the Mediterranean merry-go-round, specifically in Radio Free America number 19, the third part in our five-part series about who shot the Pope in Italian politics, Vatican politics, and so on and so forth. Those, again, available from DavCorp. We'll tell you more about that later. But note the presence of Otto Skorzeny with longtime associate Borghese and Michele Sindona in both coup attempts. Recall Michele Sindona's role as channeling as CIA funding conduit to the Borghese coup of 1970. Another interesting detail in which Skorzeny figures in the background, another thing that we looked at in connection with our Mediterranean merry-go-round series, was the Piazza Fontana bombing. Sindona also channeled CIA funds, some of which were used for the Piazza Fontana bombing. Stefano Della Chiai was the main person in carrying that out. One of the names that we looked at in connection with the Piazza Fontana bombing was a man named Guido Giannattini. Giannattini was a member of the P2 Lodge. He also was a key official of the SID, the Italian Intelligence Service. Guido Giannattini had received assistance from the BND, the Galen Organization, in the fourth of its incarnations through an arms firm called Merex, M-E-R-E-X. Now, Merex was established in considerable measure by the very same Otto Skorzeny. Interestingly enough, in addition to being an SID official and a member of P2, the aforementioned Guido Giannettini, a key participant with Stefano Della Chiaia in the Piazza Fontana massacre of 69, was also one of the key officials in a P2 faction called Terza Posizione. Now, Terza Posizione was obviously, like the rest of P2, a fascist group, but one of the people from whom they took their ideological cues was none other than Muammar Gaddafi, the same Muammar Gaddafi we see with Borghese and Skorzeny in the Internazionale Fascista and so forth. And, of course, Skorzeny and Gaddafi go all the way back to the formation of the Libyan Secret Service. So these are things that we've seen a great deal of. And we're gonna take a look at some other... we're going to take a look right now at a speculative note with regard to the Mediterranean merry-go-round, possibly, and I say possibly, linking the Mediterranean merry-go-round and the Olympics massacre. The key link may be, and we say maybe, this is food for thought and grounds for further research, and if any of our listeners can help us out on this, we'll be most appreciative. The key link here may be a guy named Abu Daoud.
All right. We are again reading from The Quest for the Red Prince. Again, the annals of the exploits of Ali Hassan Salameh. They're talking about 1968, the dramatic acceleration in PLO terrorists and PFLP terror in 1968. And they're talking about various groups of attacks on Israelis, airport bombings and mid-air bombings. And it was against this bloody background, the authors write, that Arafat started to build up his own forces of sophisticated international terror. He could not let Habash, that's George Habash, or other extremists take over the fiercest and most inventive fighters of the PLO. Although the Fatah had swelled to many thousands, already controlling a large part of Hussein's Jordan, he needed his own nucleus of smart, well-trained, sophisticated commandos who could plan and carry out operations of unconventional terrorism against Israel and its representatives abroad. Together with Abu Iyad, he selected 10 young men to head that new unit. One was Abu Daoud, spelled A-B-U-D-A-O-U-D, a tall, lean expert in explosives and a would-be assassin. Another was Fakhri El-Umari, a cold, scheming killer and meticulous planner. The newest Fatah member to be added to the list was Ali Hassan Salameh. He was given a nom de guerre, traditionally deriving from the name of his eldest son, Abu Hassan, which meant father of Hassan. Skipping down. In the meantime, and this is about the time of the planning for 1972 and the Munich massacre, in the meantime, Salameh was putting the supply and backup organization in place. He contacted Abu Daoud, another Black September leader who was in Sofia buying arms from the Bulgarians.
That last sentence perhaps should be read again in light of the context in which we're going to look at Abu Daoud or someone by that name in a second.
In the meantime, Salameh, again this is our Ali Hassan Salameh, was putting the supply and backup organization in place, meaning for the 1972 kidnapping of the Olympic athletes. He contacted Abu Daoud, another Black September leader who was in Sofia buying arms from the Bulgarians. Abu Daoud, who was traveling with a forged Iraqi passport, was asked to proceed immediately to Munich, where he was to help Masaya and Che Guevara, in quotes, in the preparation of their operation. Che Guevara, in this case, is a code name for Yusuf Nizal, another Black September activist. Skipping down. Everything was now ready for the operation. In accordance with Salameh's orders, all the backup participants in the operation had left German soil. Following the couple who had brought over the weapons and Fakhri El-Umari, Abu Daoud himself departed from Germany.
Okay, so Abu Daoud is one of the key participants in the Olympics massacre, and specifically, he supplied arms, including Kalashnikovs, AK-47s, which he picked up in Sofia, Bulgaria, as we've looked at in connection with the Mediterranean merry-go-round, and Stibom, the arms for drugs ring with massive, which appears to essentially have been a Western intelligence front, although it did have a lot of contacts in the East as well, some of which we're going to look at right here. It's worth asking whether perhaps the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, which had been operating under the auspices of DEA agent Henry Arsan since the early 60s, whether that might have been the group that helped supply the weapons for Abu Daoud. Recall that we took a look at their attempt to procure 3 20-megaton bombs for Syria in the past, so Middle Eastern terrorism is something that Stibom has been willing to dabble in. And the reason why we raise that perhaps speculative note is that someone named Abu Daoud does hook up with the aforementioned Henry Arsan. By the way, Translation credit for the and research credit for the following article goes to Ted Rubenstein. It's translated by Jonathan Marshall. I neglected to start the tape at the very beginning of our prepared portion here. If people are hearing the material about Scorzani and the Rosa Diventi coup group and the 70 Borghese coup, that comes from Jonathan Marshall's Parapolitics, the issue ending 3/31/82. So for people who hear this program on tape in the future, that's where it's from.
Again, just before reading this, to make the connections again real quickly, we had just heard that Abu Daoud, a Black September activist by the name of Abu Daoud, was involved in weapons, in the act of getting weapons for the PLO, and became involved in, and very importantly involved in, the plannings for the 1972 Munich massacre. Now, interestingly enough, Abu Daoud, at the time that he was sent to Germany, to Munich specifically, had been in Bulgaria buying weapons. Now, this is interesting for a variety of reasons. We have talked at great length during the Mediterranean Merry-Go-Round series about the fact that STBOM, the Guns for Drugs and Terrorism organization that seems to be so prominently made up of people with ties to Western intelligence, among other things, has a connection for drugs and weapons going through Bulgaria. Now, this particular connection was apparently, and nothing has been confirmed, but evidence seems to suggest at this point that this Bulgarian connection was the actual Bulgarian connection that gave the people involved in the actual attempted assassination of the Pope and some of these other things, namely the P2 and other groups, the idea in the first place for trying to pin the thing on the Bulgarians and through them on the KGB. The connections appear to be in the black market underworld of drug dealing and gun dealing. But that apparently gave somebody the idea, or those connections gave somebody the access to names and places that would enable them to try and put together a case pinning it on the Bulgarians. Of course, that particular case, the Bulgarians as the initiators of the attempted assassination, fell apart. But the bones of that, that would be theory show enough evidence that there are actually these connections that STBOM has for their illegal doings in Bulgaria, and suggest that there are probably connections. So this other Abu Daoud, the one we know for sure was involved with the Munich massacre and his gun dealings on behalf of Middle Eastern terrorists in Bulgaria, is at least an interesting bit of circumstantial evidence. Now, going on with the Le Matin article translated by Jonathan Marshall.
By the way, this article is called The Syrian Connection. It's from Le Matin of June 22nd, 1984. It's the third in a three-part series, the other two of which we dealt with in Radio Free America number 20, our fourth program about the Pope shooting series. The author is a man named Fabrizio Calvi. No relation as far as we know.
Arsène, meaning Henry Arsène, also served as an intermediary between the Polish government and that of South Yemen to sell 56 tons of arms, 500 Kalashnikovs, and 5,000...
Tokarevs.
Tokarevs, that's what I thought. But why did the Polish government use Arsène? Why did Arsène supply the Polish government with false documents attesting that the arms were destined for the Emirate of Qatar? Erdem got the response from Arsène's mouth, quote, they explained that they didn't want the Soviets to know about the operation so they wouldn't get a percentage. The Poles had a pressing liquidity problem. This deal brought them $1,600,000. Still, according to Tegmen Erdem, the first negotiations, and Tegmen Erdem, by the way, was a DEA, a STBOM participant who was arrested and decided to talk. Still, according to Tegmen Erdem, the first negotiations of which he was a part took place at the seat of the Polish ambassador in Vienna. Besides Arsène, the Polish delegation was composed of a functionary from the defense ministry named Andrzej Urbaniak, the sellers represented by Arsène, Tegmen Erdem, and two Syrians associated with Arsène. These two were named Abu Daoud, called George, and Mustafa Zinedine. So Abu Daoud, we have no idea, again, if it's the same Abu Daoud. Anybody who can give us any further information on this out there, we would be most grateful to hear it. It is, however, an intriguing coincidence, if it is a coincidence, that a man named Abu Daoud was involved with a Syrian Henry Arsène in the same type of arms dealings for the STBOM, which is so intimately linked into the whole European fascist connection. And then on the other side of the coin, the other side of this fascist connection we've been examining tonight, directly from Germany through to the Middle East, has another Abu Daoud involved in planning the 1972 Munich massacre.
Now, the last we heard of, or last that I have heard or Nip has heard about this Abu Daoud, The one that we know was involved in planning the Olympics massacre, he was arrested in Jordan in connection with a Black September plot. This was in 1973, and he probably began spilling the beans on Black September, so it is possible, he began cooperating very closely with his captors, it's possible that he has been released. We don't know, and we're certainly not saying that this Abu Daoud, who was working for Arsan, is the same. What we're asking is, are they the same? Food for thought and grounds for further research, as we like to say, and if any of your listeners can help us out in that regard, we'll be most, most grateful. Now, one of the elements in connection with terrorism that we looked at great length in the Mediterranean merry-go-round was, of course, the Red Brigades, and we specifically took a look at information that the Red Brigades may be agents provocateurs. We're going to play a Hard Rain show right now, which is going to review a lot of that material. Almost all of this was in our broadcast. In fact, either the third or fourth broadcasts on the Mediterranean merry-go-round, those are available from DAVCOR. There is one item on this that you didn't hear on that material. We'll go over that. A lot of this will be review, but the Red Brigades, part of this whole Mediterranean merry-go-round, the P2 Lodge, of course, has strong connections with the Red Brigades. We heard the earlier reference by Infield talking about how the killing of Aldo Moro was similar to a Skorzeny coup in Latin America where he eliminated an Odessa defector. And just keep all of these things in mind in light of the Skorzeny connections to this particular group and in light of the strong possibility that they may be agents provocateurs. Certainly a lot of Western connections for a left group.
All right, another segment from Hard Rain with Dave Emery.
This, by the way, also from about the same time, late summer of 84.
And you are, of course, still listening to Radio Free America here on KFJC.
What we're going to be looking at tonight are some rather unusual connections to the Red Brigades. Specifically, we're going to be taking a look at connections between the Red Brigades and a number of different institutions and elements that one might not associate with a group of communist terrorists. As I say, ostensibly the Red Brigades are a communist terrorist organization operating in Italy, and what we're going to be looking at are the connections of a number of different right-wing elements to this ostensible communist terrorist group. First thing we're going to be taking a look at concerns the role of P2 Grandmaster Licio Gelli, who we've looked at before, his role in founding the Red Brigades. Research credit for the following article goes to Ted Rubenstein, who's an excellent researcher here in the Bay Area who's been working with us for some time. Ted got the following article for us from the New Statesman. That's a British publication. This from the New Statesman issue of September 21st, 1984. Writing about Grandmaster Licio Gelli and his role founding the P2 Lodge and his role as allegedly one of the founders of the Italian Red Brigades, basically the New Statesman writes as follows. The Anselmi referred to here is Ms. Tina Anselmi, who is an Italian member of parliament who headed the parliamentary commission investigating the P2 Lodge headed by Licio Gelli. Again, from the New Statesman, September 21st, 1984. The Anselmi Commission tried to piece together the career of the P2's mysterious leader, Licio Gelli, who escaped to Switzerland, was arrested by the authorities, and escaped again to South America, where he is still presumed to be. In 1943, Gelli was actively cooperating with the SS in Italy. Shortly afterwards, as a precautionary measure, he also helped the partisans. Thanks to this insurance, unquote, he was cleared of fascist activities after the war and, it is alleged, became a common form agent. A document proving his involvement with Eastern European agents was used by the Italian Secret Services to blackmail Gelli into becoming one of their agents in 1950. Little is known of his activities until 1963. He was, for a period, in Argentina, where he established contact with fascist and Nazi exiles, as well as with the Argentinian Freemasonry. Back in Italy, he became a businessman, joined the Freemasons officially in 1963, and in 1966, entered the Secret Lodge Propaganda Due, or P2. Since then, and until 1975, Gelli was directly involved in subversion. The Anselmi report maintains that Gelli was connected with the death of left-wing publisher Gian Giacomo Feltrinelli in 1971, and with the founding of the Red Brigades. While maintaining his contacts with left terrorism, Gelli was taking part in the organization of an attempted right-wing coup d'etat. This was planned for the beginning of December 1970 under the leadership of Prince Valerio Borghese, a hero of the Fascist Republic of Salo. Well, a number of things in that passage I just read you. First of all, take note of the fact that Licio Gelli was a doctrinaire fascist during World War II and prior to it. He not only worked very closely on behalf of Mussolini, work with Mussolini and on his behalf in Italy. He also worked with the SS when, after the capitulation of the Mussolini government in Italy, of course, the German fascists, the German Nazis, continued to put up very fierce resistance to the Allies in Italy. And Licio Gelli worked with the SS, as stated in this article here. Now, in a current bestseller called In God's Name by David Yalop, which deals with the alleged poisoning of Pope John Paul I, the P2 Lodge is dealt with at great length, as is its founder, Grand Master Licio Gelli. And specifically, the P2 Lodge, Licio Gelli, rather, was named in God's Name as being an Oberlieutenant in the SS. And again, he was very close to Mussolini, worked on behalf of Mussolini throughout most of his early political career. Gelli did, that is. And although he did associate with the partisans and with communist elements in general, most of his, at the end of World War II, in order to get himself cleared, most of Gelli's contacts are with the far right. Now, the Propaganda Due Lodge that Gelli has basically been the driving force behind has been functioning as, in effect, a shadow government in Italy, as sort of a closet fascist government. Many, many powerful people from the Italian National Security Establishment, the Italian military, the Italian intelligence services, key Italian businessmen, people connected with the Vatican, notably Michele Sindona and Roberto Calvi, both criminal financiers, basically, who were very much involved with the Vatican finances. We've talked about them before on this broadcast. All of these elements combined in the P2 Lodge, headed up by Licio Gelli. P2 had strong connections with Western intelligence services and NATO, notably the CIA. In addition, of course, as indicated there, P2 involved a great many far right-wing elements. Prince Borghese, another Mussolini follower we've looked at in the past in connection with the Internazionale Fascista, an international combine of fascist elements around the world, particularly in Italy and particularly in Italy, Spain, and Latin America. And it's strange to see Licio Gelli, a right-winger with all of these fascists, basically with all of these connections. It's interesting to find him as one of the founders of the Red Brigades. Now, a possible motive for Licio Gelli backing an organization like this is to be found in another article that Ted Rubenstein got for us. This one is from The Economist, the issue of May 19th, 1984. The article is titled, The P2 Bomb Goes Off. By the way, the New Statesman article was headlined, Wanted Men Enjoying Power, that from New Statesman of September 21st. That contained the information about Gelli's founding of the Red Brigades. This article from The Economist of May 19th, 1984 was headlined, The P2 Time Bomb Goes Off. It's from The Economist's Rome correspondent. I'm just going to read a short section of this. Again, referring to Ms. Tina Anselmi, the head of the Italian Parliamentary Commission investigating Licio Gelli's P2 Lodge. Miss Anselmi also discusses the accusations that the police were inefficient during the kidnapping and murder of the Christian Democratic leader Aldo Moro by the Red Brigades in 1978.